Love you.
Thank you.
Hi everyone, my name is Habib Amanadik.
Hi Habib.
That's a bit weird, I've not spoken into a microphone before. It's a bit high, okay. I can't read my notes from here, it's in the way. Yeah, I'll take that off. How do you take this off? Cut that. Yeah, I think that's better now. Yeah. Hi everyone, my name is Habib Amanadik.
Hi Habib.
Yeah, special welcome to the newcomer. If you're new to NA, welcome. You know, this program really does work if you work it. Keep coming back. Apply yourself. Listen to what people say. Listen to the suggestions. Get involved. No problem. And, you know, it can work for you as it's worked for many of us. Thanks to Liz for her share earlier, it was very touching. I'm really nervous doing this share. So what I'll do is I'll just waffle for a bit about my day. Hopefully that'll settle me down. So yeah, you know, my life is pretty steady these days. No dramas. I woke up this morning, went and played tennis for a couple of hours, did a bit of exercise. I'm a tennis nut. I love tennis, I love sport. And I did that, then I went to work. It was only a half day today. Went home, had some lunch, late lunch, I should say. And then got prepared and came here. I was looking forward to doing this year for many reasons. One is that I feel that now that I've been invited here after being in recovery for 12 years, I feel that a little bit more accepted, you know, so that was quite important for me. You know, a lot of time, I've done quite a few shares, and a lot of time I don't really know what's going to come out. I do digress or go off on tangent. So, I mean, I'm not Donald Trump or anything, but what I've done is I've done some kind of bullet points and some notes. It's the first time I've done this, so I'm not sure how it's going to work. I just hope that it flows and the message I'm trying to put across gets across. Okay, so what I'll do first is I'm just going to talk a bit about my using. Before I use any drugs, I think I used fantasy and drama. I used food as well. I was well known for overeating. I'm still well known for overeating, but I was well known for overeating as a kid. And looking back, I was fixing my feelings. I was. You know, there was a lot of anxiety about my house and about me. So yeah, food really helped. When I was about 13, 14, gas, glue, Hipex, all of that kind of stuff. And, moved on to marijuana, so a lot of weed, a lot of black and whatnot. And a few years after that, that became a real problem. And I started drinking more instead, thinking that alcohol was okay and it was the weed was the problem. And then maybe a year or two after that, I graduated onto heroin. I was 22 at that time and took 5 years. It took me to my knees. I'm pretty glad actually that I didn't do 20 years. 20 years of crack or smack actually. 5 years was enough to, put me to my knees. It all came on top. You know, my life went from generally going in that one direction to going in this one direction. And at 27, I found myself in rehab. I didn't know nothing about addiction. I didn't know nothing about NA. What I understand about addiction now is that it's a mental, physical, and spiritual problem. It's a fear-based disease. It has a obsessive and compulsive element. It's centered in the mind, my thinking. It's self-centered and destructive in nature. It will enslave you like enslave me, you know. And as it says in the readings, you know, I live to use and I use to live. I didn't care about no one or nothing else. It was just about getting about the next use up, you know. And I was caught in that cycle, you know. And I didn't know how to get out, you know. And it was a really dark time. my personal addiction, as I understand, because I do see that we have people's addictions are different, and I think people's recoveries are different as well. And my addiction developed and manifested as a fear of being judged, humiliated, and being wrong or laughed at in front of people. I understand that now to be well, it's defined as like social anxiety. I've had this as a boy, and I've had it all the way through my life, and you know, I still have it now actually. So I had that throughout my life. When I was about 11, that's when the low self-esteem, the self-loathing, the self-hatred really kicked in. You know, thinking I'm ugly, thinking I'm stupid, that I'm dumb. You know, and because I felt like this all the time. I had a massive fear that other people could see it as well. And then when people saw this, they saw my vulnerability, that they would take me hostage. You know, so I had this massive fear, and it was around that time that I started to develop a front just to kind of stop, because somebody did take me hostage once, and it was a really bad experience, and I decided I needed to do something to make sure this didn't happen again. I was born also with a medical condition that affects one people out of every 1,000. So I was different. I was in hospital as a baby, as a boy. You know, you piled that on top. When I was about 12, 13, my mom left. There were 6 of us at our home, my mom, my dad, and me, my brother, my 2 sisters. She took my 2 sisters to Pakistan, split the family, left me, my dad, my brother here. And I felt abandoned, I felt really alone. My father was old school. He was born in 1927, he's old school. All he knows is work and provide, work and provide. Kept himself to himself. My mom was really the only contact I had, I think, from a parent, and when she disappeared, I think very much I was left on my own. You know, so that's piled on top. And then my mom came back from Pakistan, and then, being really emotional here. My father developed Parkinson's disease, and when I was 15, he came to me and he asked me to help him. He asked me to help him, and I couldn't because I was 15. And it might seem like a really small thing, but as his problem progressed, and more reminded me that he asked me for help and I wasn't able to help him. So basically, under the weight of all of this stuff, I was pretty much crushed. So yeah, my using spiraled, marijuana, 22, heroin, you know, took me to about 27 when I wound up in a drug and alcohol advisory service through my work. My ex-wife at the time had left me. I went on a week-long binge, and that was drugs, alcohol, gambling, prostitutes. I was on full self-destruct. It was there that I was introduced to NA. I went to drug and alcohol service, went to a few meetings. First one was in Soho. It was a Thursday, and it was packed. This meeting was like about as busy as this one. And people were saying stuff like serenity, and it's like, what's that even mean, or sponsorship. I understood sponsorship to mean, I'll run 5 miles, give me 5 quid. That's why I understood sponsorship to mean. You know, they said stuff like that, and they talked about the steps, and you know, and then they said the serenity prayer at the end, and they all held hands, and I was like, this is weird. And you know, I came a couple of times after that. I was stood down from work for about 8 weeks. Off my own volition, I went to my first meeting that the Drug and Alcohol Advisory Service asked me to go to the Soho meetings, because that place was in Central. But I went to my first meeting of my own back in Finsbury Park on a Thursday, and there was this man did a share there, and he was very different from me. So I was 27, He must have been, I don't know, in his 40s or 50s. He was a black man. He was from South America. His story was different to mine. He had smuggled drugs. I had used tampon bags. You know, he'd been in the music industry. I'd listen to some music. And so there was so many differences, but I remember sitting there thinking, you've just told my story. When he talked about the feeling and the thinking and how he was in himself, I was just flabbergasted because I thought, that is me, that's my story. You know, so I was at that time that I thought, you know what, this is the place for me. I was sent to rehab. You know, it dawned on me in rehab when they wouldn't let me out for the first 4 weeks, that an institution had taken over the running of my life. And that's when it really dawned on me that I was out of control. That was one major thing. The second major thing I learned was that there was, in one of the sessions, or I can't remember exactly where, there was this story was told, and some of you may have heard it. I'm going to recite, I'll tell you now. It was a story about the father, he's an architect, and his child keeps bugging him, bothering him. And he needs to get the kid away so he can carry on working, but he doesn't know what to do, so he thinks, look, there's a jigsaw over there, it's a massive jigsaw. The picture is of the world. And what I'll do is I'll give the boy the jigsaw of the world. He really doesn't know what the world looks like, you know, the oceans and the planets. And that it'll take him, you know, 8 hours to do, and he can carry on with his work. After about an hour, the boy comes back and goes, Daddy, look, I've finished the jigsaw. And the father's like, really? I can't believe this. So, you know, he goes, the father goes and has a look, and lo and behold, he's done it. And so he asks the son, he goes, look, tell me, how did you do this? And he goes, well, it's a double-sided jigsaw, and on the other side is a picture of a man. And when I put the pieces of the man together, the world just fell into place. And I thought, that really resonated with me. And, you know, I remember thinking to myself, I need to put myself back together. You know, and if I put myself back together, my life will fall back into place. You know, and I think since I heard that story has defined my recovery up until today. It's all basically been about putting myself back together, and you know, what I found is that my life has fallen back into place. You know, believe it or not. I did 8 weeks in rehab, came back to London. Started going to meetings, did the 1990. You know, I remember seeing people who were, you know, I couldn't even get my head around somebody who had 3 years, never mind 30 years. It was like blown away. But I could just about get my head around people who had 6 months and 9 months. I could comprehend that. You know, but I saw people were smiling, people looked healthy, people were clean. You know, and a lot of the people who looked to me like they were doing really well, they were people who were doing service in the meeting. So they were passing the pot around, they were making the tea, they were doing service, taking the meeting. And I thought, you know, I need to stick it up with these people. You know, if I want to learn how to do recovery and I want to stay clean, then these are the people I've got to stick around with. You know, I came back, I listened, you know, and I saw the readings obviously the readings, but also the signs people used to put on the floor that keep coming back a day at a time. And, I kept hearing about the suggestions, you know, come to meetings, do service, sponsorship and steps, you know, and I just thought, you know what, if I want what they've got, well, then I've got to do what they're doing. You know, so I had a sponsor from the second day I came out of rehab. He started me on the steps a few weeks later. You know, and I got some service positions. I had 3 service positions in my first few years. We started working the steps. It's built on the first bit of recovery is built on don't use, keep coming back. Okay, let's put the keep coming back to one side, don't use. You know, whatever happens, do not use. That's where it's built on, not using. You know, and after that, you put the 4 pillars of, you know, sponsorship, steps, meeting, and service. You know, and on top of that, then, I can build my life. Yeah, you know, I'm going to break my recovery. I'm 12 years clean, so I'm going to break it down into 3 pieces. The first 5 years, you know, it took me about 5 years to do the steps. And you know, the backdrop is, I was actually in the first 5 years of recovery, I was in a marriage I wasn't happy in. I was doing a job I wasn't suited to. I had to do that job because, you know, my life had gone down the toilet, and I had to basically take whatever job I could. Also, I had all these health problems. So I started to tackle the health stuff as well. So I started having more surgeries and seeing doctors and specialists. It didn't work out with me and the ex-wife. Went through a separation and divorce. Very painful 2.5 years. That was going on in the first 5 years. You know, and I was just working really, really hard. And, you know, my mum helped me to buy a place. I had a place after 1 year. So I was just paying mortgage down, paying debts down, you know, going to meetings, going to work, and just kind of making all these changes in my life. You know, I started, my sponsor started me on step four, actually. I don't know why, that was just his decision. But what I'm going to do is I'm just going to go briefly through the steps. I think it's important for me just to share my experience on them. Step one, about admitting my powerlessness over addiction. I couldn't even get my head around that powerlessness word. I kind of like rewrote it in my mind, and I just said, look, every time I use, everything goes belly up. So that I could understand that better then. You know, the second part of that step is that our lives are becoming manageable. I couldn't even understand what that meant. It was only later on, a few weeks in, that I found myself like sleeping at 4 a.m., waking up at 3 in the afternoon. And I just told somebody about that, that, you know, I was sleeping late, waking up early, and they said, that's your unmanageability. And I was like, yeah, actually it is, because I'm out of sync. You know, people are getting up in the morning, going to work, coming back in the afternoon. I'm waking up in the afternoon. So that was part of my unmanageability. Later on, I learned that I had a huge amount of emotional unmanageability. You know, never mind unmanageability, that was emotionally illiterate. You know, I have no understanding of my feelings. I don't know what labels to put on them. I just knew happiness, sad, and fear. When actually, you know, my feelings and emotions are far more nuanced than that. So that was the step one. Step two for me, you know, believe that power that I felt could restore to sanity. I saw that as the group. I saw that as the group, the fellowship. I didn't fully understand the program then. And the spiritual principle contained in that was hope. You know, and that if I just kept coming back and applied myself, then things could get better. You know, in step three, the principle of faith, that if I stay on this course and I work the rest of the steps and work this program, that things can get better for me. Step four and five, they come as a package. You know, courage and integrity. You know, step four gets a lot of negative press, and it's a really difficult step, no doubt. I remember writing it actually in. When I lived in Walthamstow, and I have a vivid memory of writing it, and I remember stuff I'd buried over the years, thoughts, feelings, resentments, and I remember writing it, and all my legs were tingling as, for the first time in many, many years, I was actually bringing this stuff out and putting it down on paper. And, you know, a lot of resentments, petty resentments, you know, a lot of fear, a lot of difficulty with relationships, actually. I remember becoming really emotional when he came to the part of assets, and I remember I really struggled at that time to write any assets down, you know, because I believed I didn't have any. It was, my mind was so heavily weighted to me being a monster rather than me having any positive attributes, you know. But me and my sponsor worked together, and I wrote some stuff down there. You know, I shared stuff with him, and it was a very freeing experience, actually. Six and seven, again, another pair, you know, principles of willingness and humility. I think it was a bit soon for me, really, to tackle those steps. I think, personally, they're really advanced steps, they're really difficult steps. I think they're very advanced steps as well. I really had little understanding of myself and the way my defects dominated my thinking, my behavior, my life at that time. I wasn't ready. I did the best I could. But I took the humility away when I was doing the writing, and I thought, you know what, I need to really look at myself. I had a kind of idea of myself that was something, but at the same time, I was something less than I was, but at the same time, something more than I was. I did really well at school. They told me stuff at school, like, you're the smartest kid in our school. you could be anything you want to be, etc., etc. So then I held on to this idea, but you know, potential is nothing unless it's realized, and the potential hadn't been realized, so but I was still living in the past. So at that time, I had to take a long hard look at myself, and the reality was, at that time, I was about 30, 32 years old. I was a Pakistani man. I was working in public transport for the buses. And actually, that was one of the seminal moments in my life and my recovery, because once I was able to fully accept, at that time, who I was, where I was, and the position that I had to start and build from, I was then able to go, okay, I can put the bullshit aside, and start getting my hands dirty. You know, steps 8 to 9, again, another pair. You know, I made a list, they turned down. My sponsor said, really, your main amends are to yourself. One or two to your ex-wife, and maybe one or two to siblings. I had about 40 down there, but now there's only 3 or 4. And, you know, most of those, or two of those are for yourself. So I did those. I made some apologies where I had to make. You know, there was some money I'd stolen from a previous employer. Thankfully, he didn't ask me to pay all that money back. but he asked me to make a donation to charity, which I did. He said something between 25 and 100. I made 25. Yes, shameless, I know, yeah. And I started doing the step 10. I did it from the green and gold. There was about 40 odd questions in there. But I was determined to do it as thoroughly as I could. You know, the gratitude stuff in there really stuck out as over the months and years. I did it for about a year, about 10 months of a year, I did it for 6 days out of 7. It took me about half an hour each evening, but, you know, I was really determined, you know, that I was going to put the work in and make this program of recovery work for me. Because I've been given a second chance, you see, when I came in at 27, and I was determined that I was going to grasp it with both hands and make it work. So I did that stuff, and I really, you know, the gratitude stuff, you know, really gives me a different perspective. You know, I take a lot of stuff for granted in this country, but, you know, we've got clean water, running water, electricity, Wi-Fi, you know, healthcare, free education, you know, you can get some money off the government. It's fantastic. Really, if you go to where I'm from in Pakistan, you don't get nothing. You get nothing for free. You know, I tried the step 11 the first time around. The prayer, the meditation didn't work. Head was too busy. Tried, didn't work, okay, fine, no problem. Then I moved on to 12. And the spiritual principle being service and gratitude, you know, and I was already involved in service, so I had 2-3 commitments, I was doing bits and pieces here and there. You know, but that first five years of my recovery, you know, provided me with a solid base from where I could kick on from. You know, a friend of mine used to say, his sister was in NA, used to say, it takes the first five years of recovery to get your mind back. It takes another 5 for you to learn how to use it. So I got my mind back in those 5 years, and then I was starting to learn it after that. I was divorced now, you know, moving to like the second phase of my recovery, I would say, about 5 years to 8 years. Had a new sponsor, I'm starting the steps again. Again, I was doing plenty of service, but I was really starting to struggle with the egos and the personalities in service. You know, I personally was trying to struggle with that. I'm not perfect by any stretch of imagination, you know, but I was really starting to have difficulties with that. I think a lot of it is my constant, and it doesn't go away, mine doesn't anyway, judgmentalism, intolerance, the anger, the frustration, the resentment, the stuff just, you know, lingers to this day, really. But, yeah, it's not his programming. Yeah, so yeah, the you know, I decided I'd lost many years to addiction. I decided, you know, at this time, look, I was free and I was making a lot of money, and I decided, no, I want to have a good time. So, you know, there was different girlfriends. I started going on foreign conventions. I don't really travel. I mean, look, I couldn't get off the block when I was using, you know, and then I was tied into this like mortgage and loans and stuff when I bought that house, so I wasn't really able to do much in my first few years. But the financial pressures had eased, we got divorced, and you know, free, single, and free and whatnot. And you know, I started having a good time, and you know, I threw myself into quite a lot of meetings, we go for a lot of fellowship, and you know, I was having a good time, and you know, Croatia, Berlin, the States, Dubai, go over to Ireland for a convention for a holiday. Just, you know, started to travel. You know, I had a lot of dreams when I was younger, and I lost them when I started using. And, you know, I was determined that I was going to, you know, I was going to actually, I wanted to travel and I was going to travel. I wanted certain things, so I was going to buy certain things. You know, like, you know, I grew up in Birmingham. I watched loads of football on the TV, snooker, tennis, and, you know, I dreamed of going to Wimbledon. I dreamed of going to Wembley or the Emirates to watch the Arsenal. And in recovery, I did all of that stuff. You know, I went to watch the tennis, and it was fantastic. I was like a child in a sweet shop. I was looking around, and my mouth was open. I just couldn't believe it. You know, and it's fantastic. And it's just like, you know, these are small things, you know, but I'm making my dreams come true. You know, this is what I want to see. This is what I want. What I want to visit. Where I want to go. So I started doing that. I started going to a lot of these NA dances. But I couldn't dance, you know, two left feet and all that. And I remember not enjoying the dances, so I decided, no, I need to learn how to dance. And I was too shy to go to any dance lessons, so I decided, and plus I was really tight, so I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll go on YouTube and I'll play some dance videos, and it teaches some really basic moves. And I used to stand in my bedroom with the laptop open, playing the videos, and then like shuffling left and right, back and forth, and, you know, I did that for about a year. And yeah, then I was able to actually go onto the dance floor and dance, you know, without this crippling kind of fear of being judged or, self-obsession, I didn't know much of anything. I don't really know much now either, but, you know, I recognize that what I can do is I can learn. You know, I can learn, and I can have a look around and find out where I can learn something from. In NA, you know, we have a sponsor who we learn from, a person who's, you know, further down the road than we are, who's got experience of the fellowship or work in the program of the steps, etc. You know, and they kind of take us under their wings and give us some guidance, and we work the steps with them. You know, I think if you don't know, if you want to do something, you want to learn something, you know, outside of NA, that's, you know, the same principle. You find someone who knows more than you do, and you just go to them and you get some advice and some guidance. You know, yeah. I started the steps again, as I was saying, you know, this time there was a big difference in the steps. It really is about using, but a lot of it was about my thought process and my behaviors. You know, that's what it was really honing in on, you know, the way I was thinking and behaving. You know, and I started to get a different understanding of myself. It was the second time around where the 6 and the 7, the defects of character, that's when I was at a place where I was actually able to fully get into that. And they were so difficult. The pain of looking at my defects on the page and going, oh my God, it is me. It's always been me. You know, I've heard it. I was around for many years, even before I did it the second time, and I was like, okay, yeah, I know it's an inside job. Wherever I go, I take myself, and that's why I kept up having the problem whenever I went. But occasionally, I did point the finger elsewhere, but it turned out more often than not, it was me. It was extremely painful, but extremely freeing as well, because all of a sudden, I was able to look and go, okay, now I know. You know, where the work needs to be done. You know, where the work needs to be done. You know, the step 11 as well. I think I was now ready actually to fully get into the step 11. I was able to get a handle on my mind. I'd read the book called The Power of Now. Some of you might know it. Twice. And I developed the idea of the watcher. And it took a good couple of years actually, but just kind of like really learned from there about how to slow down. You know, how to let the thoughts just go across my mind and not kind of, you know, disengage from my thinking. And just kind of like, as much as possible, be in the moment. You know, my understanding of recovery, but for me, the pinnacle of recovery is to be in the moment as much as possible. That's the pinnacle of recovery. You know, and what I found is that when I can switch off from my thinking, I'm really free, because a lot of time my thoughts construct a reality that's just false, basically. You know, my reality is created a lot of time by my thinking. You know, and it's not always true. Yeah, so the last stage of my recovery, last 4 years, I think I decided to settle down. I did some service on the London Convention Committee. I struggled with the personalities there. I was doing this without feedback to the areas, and I remember going to one area down in the south, and someone accused me of only doing service so I could save £20 entrance fee on the convention. And I was like, I'm giving like 30 man hours here, but only to save £20. Doesn't add up. But it really hurt. And I just decided, you know, I think I need to back away a bit. And I started a business, actually. I started a business, and I learned actually in an area about sponsorship and had someone mentoring me. And I got somebody to mentor me outside of here, and they mentored me in the business. So I got a job, but I started a business on the side as well. And, developed and learned a lot from that as well. So I decided just to basically focus on that. But I stepped back. I started going to less meetings. Thank you. And it's a difficult process being yourself, for me anyway. But I learned the hard way. I sat with myself, and I pretty much learned strategies how to deal with being with myself and being on my own. I'm far more comfortable now being on my own. And I don't use NA as a crutch anymore. In the beginning, I fully used it as a crutch, and my head was going around the bend. I need a meeting. But now it's like my head's going around the bend. Okay, breathe deeply, call someone, let it go. Is it that important? No, okay, we'll deal with it later. Yeah, at work at the moment, that kind of thing. Lots of work has done, but what I will say is the social phobia that I spoke about is still persists to today. And I've done lots of work on myself, and I stripped back a lot of the stuff. A lot of the mess that I've created in my addiction, a lot of the troubles before it, and in my recovery as well. And what I'm left with is still that kind of fear of being judged, fear of being humiliated, fear of being mocked, laughter, etc. So that's kind of like, I think I need to really go into that and look at that again. So that's, I think, the task for me from here. I've got a few minutes. I just want to say a bit about, when I came into recovery, I was about 27. I turned 40 this year, and I remember thinking, what would life be like at 40 if I'm still in recovery? And I didn't think it'd be this good. I didn't think that at least I'd feel comfortable in my own skin. Life is still difficult. Life's not a bed of roses. Just being in recovery doesn't mean that everything's going to be fucking fantastabiosi, or if that's even a word. But it's, life is still life, but it's much better than the way it used to be before, I still have a lot of those stuff in me, still get resentful, still judgmental, intolerant, etc. But what I've got from here, this program, is I've learned that, I can learn and develop tools how to deal with that kind of stuff, so it doesn't have a huge detrimental impact on my life. What's important for me is anyone actually, keep coming back, just keep coming back, a day at a time, keep coming back. I have the end game in sight. I want to stay clean forever. I don't want to use. That is the end game, ultimately. I'd be lying if I said any different. But how I achieve that is a day at a time. Like when a snooker player plays, he plays to win the tournament, but he plays two shots at a time, and then he plays a frame at a time, and a session at a time, and a match at a time. His ultimate goal is to win it, but he breaks it down into small, manageable chunks, and then, he's able to manage it and then reach his goal, So that's how I do it, I was dealt a pretty shit hand, actually. My life dealt me a pretty shit hand, and I didn't know how to play, But since I come to NA, and NA taught me how to play that hand, and I've played that shit hand much better now. And it's just been like, the stuff I've learned in here. I just keep learning, and I persist. I'm grateful to NA, I'm grateful to the people who do service. I built my life with what was on offer here, and so can you. Thank you.